So this morning, I'm going to do something a little bit different than I've ever talked about. I'm going to give a history lesson. There is a purpose. And Jim, the verses that Jim read to us, Colossians 2, chapter 6, as ye have therefore received Christ Jesus the Lord, so ye walk in him, rooted and built up in him, and established in the faith, as ye have been taught. And the purpose of this history lesson is to strengthen those roots, to strengthen faith in God's word. This is something that most of you are probably aware of, but probably some of you younger ones aren't. And it's, when I first became aware of this, it really, really strengthened my faith in the Word. And as a side benefit, if you really pay attention, you younger people, you might get a better idea of the chronology of the Old Testament, of how the different books overlap and coincide in time. That's not really the purpose of this, but if you follow along closely, you might get a better understanding of that. In about 1,000 BC, 3,000 years ago, around there, Samuel was the prophet in Israel. And at this point in time, Shiloh was the spiritual capital of Jerusalem. That's where the Ark of the Covenant was. That's where Samuel was based out of. They had been there at this point for about 350 years. They were well established there. It was a well established town, had walls, fortified walls. It was their spiritual center. And so we're just going to read, I'm going to read Samuel chapter 4. And the word of Samuel came to all Israel. Now Israel went out against the Philistines to battle and pitched beside Ebenezer, and the Philistines pitched in Aphek. And the Philistines put themselves in array against Israel. And when they joined the battle, Israel was smitten before the Philistines. And they slew of the army in the field about 4,000 men. And when the people were coming to the camp, the elders of Israel said, "Wherefore hath the Lord smitten us today before the Philistines? Let us fetch the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord out of Shiloh unto us, that when it cometh among us, it may save us out of the hand of our enemies." I do find it interesting that said when they were coming to the camp, the elders said, "Wherefore hath God done this to us today?" But they didn't inquire of Samuel. They didn't wait for an answer. They just said, "Let's grab the ark and go back to battle." Now, so the people sent to Shiloh that they might bring from thence the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of hosts, which dwelleth between the cherubims. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the Ark of the Covenant of God. And when the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord came into the camp, all Israel shouted with a great shout, so that the earth rang again. And when the Philistines heard the noise of the shout, they said, "What meaneth the noise of this great shout in the camp of the Hebrews?" And they understood that the Ark of the Lord was come into the camp. And the Philistines were afraid, for they said, "God has come unto the camp." And they said, "Woe unto us, for there hath not been such a thing before. Woe unto us, who shall deliver us out of the hand of these mighty gods? These are the gods that smote the Egyptians with all the plagues in the wilderness. Be strong and quit yourselves like men, O ye Philistines, that ye be not servants unto the Hebrews, as they have been unto you. Quit yourselves like men and fight." And the Philistines fought, and Israel was smitten, and they fled every man to his tent, and there was a very great slaughter. And there fell of Israel 30,000 footmen. The ark of God was taken, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were slain. And there ran a man of Benjamin out of the army and came to Shiloh the same day with his clothes rent and with earth on his head. And when he came, lo, Eli sat upon a seat by the wayside watching, for his heart trembled for the ark of God. And when the men came into the city and told it, all the city cried out. And when Eli heard the noise of the crying, he said, "What meaneth the noise of this tumult?" And the men came hastily and told Eli. And Eli was 98 years old, and his eyes were dim that he could not see. And the man said unto Eli, "I am he that came out of the army, and I fled today out of the army." And he said, "What is there done, my son?" And the messenger answered and said, "Israel has fled before the Philistines, and there hath been a great slaughter among the people. And thy two sons also, Hophni and Phinehas, are dead, and the ark of God is taken." And it came to pass, when he made mention of the ark of God, that he fell off from the seat backward by the side of the gate, and his neck brake, and he died, for he was an old man and heavy. And he had judged Israel 40 years. And his daughter-in-law, Phinehas' wife, was with child, near to be delivered. And when she heard the tidings that the ark of God was taken, and that her father-in-law and her husband were dead, she bowed herself and travailed, for her pains came upon her. And about the time of her death, the woman that stood by her said unto her, "Fear not, for she has borne a son." But she answered not, neither did she regard it. And she named the child Ichabod, saying, The glory is departed from Israel, because the ark of God was taken, and because of her father-in-law and her husband. And she said, The glory is departed from Israel, for the ark of God is taken. And the Philistines took the ark of God and brought it from Ebenezer to Ashdod. Y'all likely know the story of what happened with it, but the ark never did return to Shiloh. And nobody knows for sure if it was that battle where Shiloh was burned and destroyed. But in 1980, archaeologists believe they have found the encampment at Shiloh. I'm not really sure all the details, but they seem pretty confident that they know where it is. And then they have found it. And this is just one description of it from an archaeological magazine. It says, a destruction layer from the time of Samuel was already identified in Israel Finkelstein's excavation in the 1980s. The complex of buildings was destroyed by a violent conflagration whose traces were visible everywhere, charred floors and heaps of fallen rocks and bricks, sometimes more than 1 meter deep. There's more, but the place was thoroughly destroyed. As far as anybody can tell, it was never lived in again. It was never settled again. And they say it was right around the same time as this battle. It was around 3000 BC. It was toward the end of Samuel's life, or after the end of his life. But whether it was that battle or shortly after, the Philistines got the upper hand there in that area and drove the Israelites away from there. They never did return. So now I'm going to jump ahead ...350 to 400 years, and go to Jeremiah chapter 7. I'm sorry. Let me pick up my okay. Yeah, Jeremiah, verse 7. I'm going to read 1 through 26. The word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, "Stand in the gate of the Lord's house and proclaim here this word, and say, Hear the word of the Lord, all ye of Judah, that enter in at the gates to worship the Lord. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, amend your ways and your doings, and I will cause you to dwell in this place. Trust ye not in lying words, saying, The temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord are these. For if you thoroughly amend your ways and your doings, if you thoroughly execute my judgment between a man and his neighbor, if ye oppress not the stranger, the fatherless, the widow, and shed not innocent blood in this place, neither walk after other gods to hurt you, then I will cause you to dwell in this place. in the land that I gave to your fathers forever and ever. Behold, ye trust in lying words that cannot profit. Ye steal, murder, commit adultery, and swear falsely, and burn incense unto Baal, and walk after other gods whom ye know not. And come and stand before me in this house which is called by my name, and say, we are delivered to do all these abominations. Is this house which is called by my name become a den of robbers in your eyes? Behold, even I have seen it, saith the Lord. But go ye now into my place which was in Shiloh, where I set my name at first, and see what I did to it for the wickedness of my people, Israel. And now, because ye have done these works, saith the Lord, and I spake unto you, rising up early and speaking, but ye heard not, and I called you, but ye answered not. Therefore will I do unto this house, which is called by my name, wherein ye trust, and unto the place which I gave to you, and to your fathers, as I have done to Shiloh, and I will cast you out of my sight, as I have cast all your brethren, and even the whole seed of Ephraim. Therefore pray not thou for this people, neither lift up cry nor prayer for them, neither make intercession to me, for I will not hear thee. Seest thou not what they do in the cities of Judah and the streets of Jerusalem? Children gather wood, and fathers kindle a fire, and the women knead their dough, to make cakes to the Queen of Heaven, to pour out drink offerings to other gods, that they may provoke me to anger. Do they provoke me to anger, saith the Lord? Do they not provoke themselves to confusion in their own faces? Therefore, thus saith the Lord, behold, mine anger and my fury shall be poured out upon this place, upon man, upon beast, upon the trees of the field, upon the fruit of the ground, and it shall burn and shall not be quenched. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, put your burnt offerings unto your sacrifices, and eat flesh. For I spake not unto your fathers, nor commanded them in the day that I brought them out of the land of Egypt concerning burnt offerings or sacrifices. But this thing I commanded, saying, obey my voice, and I will be your God, and ye shall be my people, and walk ye in all the ways I have commanded you, that it may be well unto you. But they hearkened not, nor inclined their ear, but walked in the counsels and imaginations of their evil heart, and went backward and not forward. Since the day that your fathers came forth out of the land of Egypt unto this day, I have even sent unto you all my servants, the prophets, daily rising up early and sending them. Yet they hearkened not unto me, nor inclined their ear, but they hardened their neck, and they did worse than their fathers. So Jeremiah was standing in the temple. He's standing at this point in the temple in Jerusalem. At this point, Jerusalem has been well settled as the spiritual center. This is after Solomon. The walls are strong. In the time of Solomon, they became extremely wealthy, powerful. A couple generations after Solomon, people are still living off that strength and power. It says, that chapter starts out saying, trust ye not in lying words, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord. I think he's referring to the fact that they trusted in the wall. They felt secure in Jerusalem. They had the temple, they had power. They felt like things were never going to change. God was with them. They were his people. They had their temple. They're in control. And a few years later, after that speech that Jeremiah made in the temple, God sends him again to the temple. And this is what he says. The word that came to Jeremiah concerning all the people of Judah in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, the king of Judah, that was the first year of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. So this is during the first year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. They can see the strength of the Babylonians afar off. I'm sure they hear about it. They know about them. But they're still feeling pretty secure in their environment. The which Jeremiah the prophet spake unto all the people of Judah and to the inhabitants of Jerusalem, saying, From the 13th year of Josiah, the son of Ammon, king of Judah, even unto this day, that is the 23rd year, the word of the Lord hath come unto me, and I have spoken unto you, rising early and speaking, but ye heard not, ye have not hearkened. And the Lord has sent unto you all his servants and prophets, rising early and sending them, but ye have not hearkened, nor inclined your ear to hear. They said, Turn ye again now, every one from his evil way, from the evil of your doings, that dwell in the land of the Lord, dwell in the land that the Lord hath given you and to your fathers forever and ever, and go not after other gods to serve them, to worship them, and provoke me not to anger with the works of your hands, and I will do you no hurt. Ye have not hearkened unto me, saith the Lord, that ye might provoke me to anger with the works of your hands to your own hurt. Therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, because ye have not heard my words, behold, I will send and take all the families of the north, saith the Lord, and Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant, and I will bring them against this land and against this, the inhabitants thereof, and against all the nations round about, and will utterly destroy them, and make them an astonishment and a hissing and a perpetual desolation. Moreover, I will take from them the voice of mirth and the voice of gladness, the voice of the bridegroom and the voice of the bride, the sound of the millstones and the light of the candle. And this whole land shall be a desolation and an astonishment, and these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. And it shall come to pass, when 70 years are accomplished, that I will punish the king of Babylon and that nation, saith the Lord, for their iniquity and the land of the Chaldeans, and will make it perpetual desolation. And I will bring upon that land all my words which I have pronounced against it, even all that is written in this book which Jeremiah hath prophesied against all the nations. For many nations and great kings shall serve themselves also, and I will recompense them according to their deeds and according to the works of their own hands. For thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, Take the wine cup of this fury at my hand, and cause all the nations to whom I send thee to drink it. And they shall drink, and be moved, and be mad, because of the sword I will send among them. Then I took the cup at the Lord's hand, and made all the nations to drink unto whom the Lord had sent me, to wit, Jerusalem, and the cities of Judah, and the kings thereof, and the princes thereof, to make them a desolation, an astonishment, a hissing, and a curse, as it is this day. Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and his servants, and his princes, and all his people, and all the mingled people, and all the kings of the land of Uz, and all the kings of the land of the Philistines, Ashkelon, Azah, Ekron, and the remnant of Ashdod, Edom, and Moab, and the children of Ammon, and the kings of Tyrus, and all the kings of Zidon, and the kings of the isles beyond the sea, Dedan, and Tema, and Buz, and all that are in the utmost corners, and the kings of all the kings of Arabia, and all the kings of the mingled people that dwell in the desert, and the kings of Zimri, and all the kings of Elam, and the king of the Medes, and the kings of the north, far and near one another, and all the kingdoms of the world which are upon the face of the earth, and the king of Shishak shall drink after them. Therefore, thus saith the Lord God, Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, Drink ye, and be drunken, spew and fall, rise no more. Because of the sword which I will send among you. Okay, so in that pronouncement of destruction for Jerusalem and Israel, we see that Jeremiah makes the prophecy, and it shall come to pass when 70 years are accomplished that I'll punish the king of Babylon. And that nation, saith the Lord, for their iniquity. At the same time, he's predicting the end of Jerusalem. He's also predicting the end of their conquerors. And when Jeremiah, after he preached in the temple there, the elders of the temple wanted to stone him. They said it was blasphemy. He was telling them that Jerusalem was going to be destroyed, and to them that was unthinkable. It was akin to blasphemy. They actually wanted to kill him. Some cooler heads prevailed, and they decided that he may be a prophet. We better not kill him. So they let him go, but they had a whole trial and threatened to kill him. Second Kings tells us about the destruction of Jerusalem, and I didn't write down the reference, but I was going to read it. Say that again. 25. Yes, that's it. So God has pronounced that he's going to do the same thing to Shiloh as he did in Jerusalem. Jeremiah, through Jeremiah, in 2 Kings chapter 25. So the latter half of 2 Kings is the same time that Jeremiah is doing his preaching. Same came to pass in the ninth year of his reign, in the 10th month, the 10th day of the month, that Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. So this is 10 years after that last thing I preached, or I read. So his second pronouncement in the temple was the first year of Nebuchadnezzar. This is 10 years later. He came and all his host against Jerusalem, pitched against it, and they built forts against it, and the city was besieged until the 11th year of the king of Zedekiah. And on the ninth day of the fourth month, the famine prevailed in the city, and there was no bread for the people of the land. The city was broken up, and all the men of war fled by night by the way of the gate between two walls, which is by the king's garden. Now the Chaldees were against the city round about, and the king went the way toward the plain. And the army of the Chaldees pursued after the king, overtook him in the plains of Jericho, and all his army were scattered from him. So they took the king and brought him up to the king of Babylon, to Riblah, and they gave judgment upon him. And they slew the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes, and put the eyes out of Zedekiah, bound him with fetters of brass, and carried him to Babylon. And in the fifth month of the seventh day of the month, which is the 19th year of King Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came Nebuchadnezzar, captain of the guard, a servant of the king of Babylon, to Jerusalem. And he burnt the house of the Lord, and the king's house, and all the houses of Jerusalem, and every great man's house burnt he with fire. And the army of the Chaldees that were with the captain of the guard brake down the walls of Jerusalem round about. And the rest of the people that were left in the city, and the fugitives that fell away to the king of Babylon, with the remnant of the multitude, did Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, carried away. But the captain of the guard left the poor of the land to be the vine dressers and the husbandmen. And then it goes on to talk about how they basically just took everything of value out of the temple. So you may have noticed a discrepancy. It says Nebuchadnezzar first came to Jerusalem in the first year of his reign, and then it says in the 19th year of his reign. There's actually three different incursions to Jerusalem. The first one, he came, he took the king, and he appointed his own governor over the land. That governor later tried to form a league with Egypt and fight against Nebuchadnezzar, or at least ignore his rule. So then Nebuchadnezzar sent an army again and smote him, took away most of the military people, and set his own captains and his own governor again over the land. And then after a time, there was another rebellion. And so a third time, he came and totally destroyed the city, emptied the temple, and Jerusalem was pretty much waylaid. The only people left were poor farmers and fishermen, illiterate people. He took anybody that had any building skill, any skill at all, he took with him. And so he takes all these people back to Babylon. Daniel is one of them. And I looked up some stuff about Babylon. The oldest known description of Babylon comes from, they call him the father of history, Herodotus. He didn't always get everything right, but this is the oldest description we have. It said it had walls. The city formed a 14-mile square. The walls were completely surrounded by water. They had the Tigris and the Euphrates. They diverted them, went all the way around the city. Had defensive walls 150 feet wide and 200 feet tall. Think of that. This is a massive, massive city. They ran chariot races, four abreast, with each chariot being pulled by eight horses, four abreast. They had races on top of these walls, plus crowds on either side. I mean, that's how big, that's how massive these walls were. The walls also had water on both sides of the walls, the inner and the outside. They had moats on both sides of them. And inside the city, it was divided into eight squares, each one with their own massive defensive walls. So they could go, they could have eight self-contained defensive positions within inside the city. They had enough pasture for all the animals that they needed inside the city. They had enough garden, they had enough grain. They could grow their own grain within the city walls to support the people. Plus, before the siege of Babylon, they could see the rise of the Persians, and they started storing grain. The city of Babylon was considered completely impenetrable. In 587, so this is maybe 40 years after the destruction of Jerusalem, King Cyrus decides he's going to take Babylon. And when he does, they fight a battle outside the walls, and the Persians are totally repelled. The Babylonians go back inside their walls, and they shut the gate. And they are so thoroughly, they feel so safe inside that Belshazzar decide he's going to have a party. I'm going to read a little bit about that party. It's in Daniel chapter 5. And again, from Herodotus, and like I say, he's not, a lot of historians question a lot of things Daniel says, but this sounds reasonable. I'm not sure, but according to Herodotus, not only did Belshazzar decide to have a great party, he declared that everyone should go to the temple of their highest god. They had many, many temples in Babylon, and feast to their gods. And when the king of Babylon made a pronouncement, you didn't get to question it. And if he did make that pronouncement, there would have been nobody on the walls, nobody around defending the city. Anyway, that's what Herodotus claims. He claims there was a pronouncement made that everybody should be at the temple on this night. So he's having a great party. He knows the army's outside. Actually, I should say that before the first battle that the Persians and Babylonians had in this party, there's probably 6 months, the Persians went upstream a little bit. And what they were doing is they were digging huge canals. They dug 136 canals each. I can't remember the dimensions. They were massive. And they led to a depression in the land, a marsh. So basically, while this party's going on and everybody's in the temples, the water around their moats is getting lower and lower. The gates of Babylon went down into the water, but they didn't go down to the bottom. So Belshazzar the king made a great feast to the thousands of his lord and drank wine before the thousands. Belshazzar, while he tasted the wine, commanded to bring the golden and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple which was in Jerusalem, that the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines might drink therein. And they brought the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple of the house of God, which was at Jerusalem, and the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines all drank from them. So they, just pure mockery to the God of Israel. They're going to drink out of the sacred vessels. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and of silver and of brass and of iron and of wood and of stone. In the same hour came forth the fingers of a man's hand and wrote over against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. And the king's countenance was changed, and his thoughts troubled him, so that the joints of his loins were loosed, and his knees smote one against another. The king wet himself. The king cried aloud to bring the astrologers and the Chaldeans and the soothsayers, and the king spake and said to the wise men of Babylon, "Whosoever shall read this writing and show me the interpretation thereof shall be clothed with scarlet and have a chain of gold about his neck and be the third ruler of the kingdom." And all the king's wise men came, and they couldn't answer it. And finally, one of the king's wives came and said, "There's this guy, Daniel." And Daniel came. In verse 13, it says, "And Daniel was brought in before the king. And the king spake and said unto Daniel, Art thou that Daniel which art of the children of the captivity of Judah, whom the king my father brought out of Jewry? I have even heard of thee, that the spirit of the gods is in thee, and that the light and understanding and excellent wisdom is found in thee. And now the wise men, the astrologers, have been brought in before me, that they should read this writing and make known unto me the interpretation thereof. But they cannot show the interpretation of the thing. And I have heard of thee, that thou canst make interpretations and can dissolve doubts. Now if thou can read the writing and make known to me the interpretation thereof, thou shalt be clothed with scarlet and have a chain of gold about thy neck, and shall be the third ruler of the kingdom." And Daniel answered and said before the king, "Let thy gifts be to thyself, and give thy rewards to another. Yet I will read the writing unto the king, and make known to him the interpretation. O thou king, most high God, the most high God gave Nebuchadnezzar thy father a kingdom in majesty and glory. And for the majesty that he gave him, all the people, nations, languages trembled before him. Whom he would slew, he slew, whom he would slew, and whom he would be kept alive. But when his heart was lifted up, and his mind was hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him. And he was driven from the sons of men, and his heart was made like the beast, and his dwelling was with wild asses, and they fed him with grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew the Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men, and that he appointeth over it, and that he appointeth over it whomever he will. And thou, his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart, though thou knewest all this, but hast lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven, and have brought the vessels of his house before thee, and thou, before thee, and thou, and thy lords, and thy wives, and thy concubines, and have drunk wine in them, and have praised the gods of silver, the gods of gold, of brass, iron, and wood, and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know, and the God in whose thy hand it in whose hand thy breath is, in whose are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified. Then was the part of the hand sent from him, and this writing was written. And this is the writing that was written. I'm just going to read the interpretation. It says, this is the interpretation of the thing. There's three words. Mene, God hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it. And Tekel, thou art weighed in the balances, and thou art found wanting. And Perez, thy kingdom is divided and given unto the Medes. Then commanded Belshazzar, they clothed Daniel with scarlet, put a chain of gold about his neck, made a proclamation concerning him that he should be a third ruler in the kingdom. And that night Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, was slain, and Darius the Median took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. Darius was Cyrus's second cousin. He was probably his leader in that battle. What they did was they drained They drained enough water out of the river so they could walk right in under the gates. Everybody was feasting and partying. They just walked in and took the city without any fight at all. So Darius was set over Babylon for a little while, but so let me go now to Isaiah 45, and this is really the point of this whole thing. Isaiah was written about 150 to 200 years maybe before that party. Chapter 45 said, "Thus say the Lord to his anointed, to Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden to subdue nations before him." And just the detail here is pretty interesting. "And I will loose the loins of the kings to open gates before him." The gates that shall not be leaved, or they shall not be shut. "I will go before thee and make crooked place straight. I will break in pieces the gates of brass and cut asunder the bars of iron. And I will give the treasures of the darkness and the hidden riches of secret places, that thou may knowest that I, the Lord, which call thee by name, am the God of Israel. For Jacob my servant's sake, and Israel's mine elect, I have called thee by name, and I have surnamed thee, though thou hast not known me. I am the Lord, and there is none else, there is no God beside me. I girded thee, though thou hast not known me, that they may know from the rising of the sun and from the west that there is none beside me. I am the Lord, there is none else. I form the light and create darkness, and I make peace and create evil. I, the Lord, do all these things. Drop down, ye heavens, from above, and let the skies pour down righteousness. Let the earth open, and let them bring forth salvation. Let the righteousness spring up together. I, the Lord, have created it. Woe unto him that striveth with his maker. Let the potsherd strive with the potsherds of the clay of the earth. Shall the clay say to him, what fashioneth it? What makest thou, or thy work? He hath no hands. Woe unto him that saith unto his father, what begettest thou? Or to the woman, who hast brought forth? Thus saith the Lord, the Holy One of Israel and his Maker, ask me of things to come, concerning my sons and concerning the work of my hands. And concerning the work of my hands command ye me. I have made the earth, and I have created man upon it. I, even my hands, have stretched out the heavens, and have their host, and all their host I have commanded. I have raised him up in righteousness, and will direct all his ways, and he shall build my city, and he shall let go my captives, not for price nor reward, say the Lord of hosts." Years before Cyrus took the city of Babylon, 100 years before he was born, Isaiah wrote this. I think that should really give us a lot of confidence in what the Bible tells us. Shortly after the conquering, Cyrus left Darius in charge of the city. He went around doing some more conquering. But eventually he settled Babylon as his seat of power. So 2 Chronicles, 2 Chronicles 36. I'm just going to read verse 23, last verse. But so 2 Chronicles ties in with this time period. It says, thus saith the king of Persia, thus saith Cyrus, king of Persia, all the kingdoms of the earth hath the Lord God of heaven given to me, and he hath charged me to build him a house in Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Who is there among you of all his people? The Lord his God be with him, and let him go." So Cyrus comes back to Babylon. He makes it his seat. At this point, Daniel, before he left, was was made the third ruler of the kingdom. I can only assume that Daniel met Cyrus and probably showed him a scroll of Isaiah with his name on it that was written 150 years before he got there. Can you imagine the astonishment, the power that must have? And he was convinced to rebuild Jerusalem and let the people go. I just find that extremely comforting. That really bolsters confidence in God's word to me, that it'd be that specific. So, anyway, I'll leave it at that. Sorry it took so long, but I hope it was useful.